Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio, I think, although I'm pretty delirious at this point, Taylor, because yesterday was absolutely insane. Eight games, the first time in Major League history, maybe the last time, eight playoff games in one day. And the two games that we had were epic games. They felt like they took 2 months, and they kind of did, spilling from noon on September 30th to about 1 a.m. on October 1st.
I was a little worried about you. I mean, I know, you know, the Braves-Reds, it was epic in a lot of ways, but it wasn't really your brand of baseball. So I felt like, you know, like, oh, man, he's probably sitting there looking at the clock. And then, you know, I see the Yankees game gets that second rain delay. I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be a tough one. Buster, he might be a little bit, his elbows might be a little sharp in the morning. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And we restart again today at noon, Braves and Reds. And so I, you know, as soon as I get done the podcast, got to start shaking off all these cobwebs and start getting ready for the next one. Yesterday, Braves and Reds starting at noon, and there were a lot of strikeouts. Trevor Bauer was dealing.
Bauer's 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He chased a breaking ball in the dirt. It caroms off the catcher Casale in the grass in front of home, and he picks it up to throw out Markakis, darting down the first baseline, and that is eight strikeouts for Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, that was Trevor Bauer. You heard that on 700 WLW. The theme for the day was set.
Swing and a miss, and he strikes out Swanson. Seven scoreless innings in the book. And you can see the windmill of the right arm by Trevor Bauer as he comes off the mound. He has struck out 11.
That was Jeff Brantley, the Cowboy, on 700 WLW. But neither team could score. 0-0 through the eighth, through the ninth. Top of the 11th, the Reds loaded the bases.
No balls, two strikes, two down. Matzik ready to deal. Pitch on the way. Got him swinging, strike three. And Matzik defuses a bomb in the top of the 11th inning, and they leave him loaded.
That from 680, the Fan, 37 strikeouts in this game. It's a new postseason record. Finally, in the bottom of the 13th inning, Freddie Freeman came to the plate, first and third. One out.
A pitch on the way. Swung on, driven out to center field to the Braves. Take game one. And Freddie Freeman breaks hearts in Cincinnati and scores Pache. And in 13 innings, the Braves take down the Reds 1-0.
Yeah, in that case, the Reds had gone to a five-man infield. Freddie Freeman, fighting late afternoon shadows, was able to get done against Amir Garrett. And again, these two teams will play at noon today. The Tampa Bay Rays took care of business against the Toronto Blue Jays.
1-1 the count. And the pitch and a swing and a high fly ball down the left field line. Gone! A grand slam for Renfro. And they have indeed blown it open, now leading 7-0 in the second inning.
That was Dan Schulman on ESPN Radio. The final score there, 8-2. Tampa Bay eliminates the Blue Jays. We'll be talking with Dan Schulman coming up about everything that happened yesterday. The Athletics and the White Sox. The White Sox needing one victory to advance, but Marcus Semien wasn't having any of that.
Fly to right, A's lead 2-0. Marcus hits a deep drive into center. Robert going back to the track. He'll turn and watch it fly. And the A's have doubled their lead on a center field home run by Semien. And it's 4-0 A's in the second.
Ken Korak on the A's cast. Now in the top of the third inning, the White Sox rallied. And then this happened.
Okada, switch hitter batting left, and a changeup lifts to left center field in the gap. On the run back is Canna to the wall, jumps at the wall, he's got it! A Joe Rudy type catch against the wall, trying to double off the trailing runner Anderson, he just gets back in time. What a play by Mark Canna, scaling the padding in left center field, a play that would make Joe Rudy smile.
Yeah, that play from the 1972 World Series, iconic images of that catch, and they were very similar catches. Pretty cool for Oakland, which wins 5-3. And afterward, Chris Bassitt, who started for Oakland, talked about the catch.
Game changer, game saver. That's automatic two runs if you don't catch it. I saw T.A. basically halfway to third, and I said, that ain't good. And he came up with this kind of ridiculous freaking catch, and, I mean, truly saved my outing.
Marlins and the Cubs starting their series in Wrigley Field, and Corey Dickerson got the Marlins going.
Fastball line drive, deep left center. Hamilton back at the wall. It's gone! It's gone! Just over the top of the fence and opposite field. Three-run home run for Corey Dickerson. And the Marlins strike in a major way in the seventh inning.
That from ESPN Radio, and the Marlins are going to win 5-1 in the first game of that series. The Astros and the Twins carrying a 17-game losing streak in the postseason, and Carlos Correa got a big hit in the top of the seventh inning.
Here's the pitch. He drives this one pretty well. Right center field, looking up is Kepler. Still looking up, and it's gone! Straightaway center for Correa. The Astros lead it 2-1.
Steve Sparks, KBME, 790 AM. The Astros will go on and win 3-1. Carlos Correa was asked after the game, what was the celebration like in the locker room?
It was a special celebration this time. You know, I know a lot of people are mad. I know a lot of people don't want to see us here. But what are they going to say now? You know, we're a solid team. We play great baseball. We won a series on the road in Minnesota. So what are they going to say now?
We're going to be talking about that with Dan Shulman coming up. The Padres found out before the start of their series against the Cardinals, no Mike Clevinger. He's got an arm issue that's going to apparently keep him out a while. No Denelson Lamet. So they went with Chris Paddock. Paul DeJong took advantage.
The pitch to DeJong, and that's hit hard up the middle, a base hit to center field. That scores Dylan Carlson. Yadier Molina is held up at third base. The Cardinals have runners at first and third, one out, and they've tacked on to a 4-2 lead and lead 5-2.
John Rooney on the Cardinals radio network, and after the Cardinals won game one 7-4, Paddock talked about what went wrong.
You know, I left it all on the field. You know, going into the game, I lived for those moments. You know, that's the moment you work for your entire life. To be able to go out there and say that you got to pitch in a postseason game. And, you know, the most frustrating part is it just didn't go my way. And I've been battling that, you know, all season long. And I'm going to keep my head up. You know, it's so frustrating, you know, but tomorrow's a new day. And I got faith in these boys that, you know, that might be my first one, but it's not my last postseason start this year. You know, we're going to come back tomorrow, their heads up high. And, you know, take game two.
The Dodgers and the Brewers began their series last night in Dodger Stadium. And beforehand, the Brewers, who obviously are outmanned by the roster of the Dodgers with the tremendous resources, the depth and the LA has, the Brewers announced that Devin Williams, the Rookie of the Year candidate, he's out. He's got some shoulder soreness. Corbin Burns is out. Brett Anderson out. With that in mind, the Brewers trying to keep up with the Dodgers, and Corey Seager did some damage in the bottom of the seventh.
And now Seager swings and drives the ball to center field. It is deep. It is gone. Right over the 395 marker to straightaway center field, and the Dodgers now lead 4-2.
Dan Shulman with that call on ESPN Radio. He did a double dip yesterday. Here was the call in the top of the ninth inning.
The 2-2 on the way. Swing and a miss. He got him with a cutter up above the belt. Jansen gets it done tonight, picks up the save, and the Dodgers win game one, Jim, by a score of 4-2.
Yeah, so they could wrap up that series later today. The epic game of the day, the Yankees and the Indians in Cleveland, the Yankees needing one win to wrap this up. But the beginning of the game was very strange. It was delayed by the expectation of weather that didn't come through initially. And then they started the game, and the winds blew in, and the rains blew in, and they had to delay it in all. Two delays of 76 minutes. Josh Naylor took advantage of Masahiro Tanaka in the bottom of the first.
The 1-0. Swing and a line drive base hit. That's a gapper into left center field. It's going to go all the way to the wall. One run is in. Ramirez scores right behind him. Reyes, he is in to score. What turned out to be a gap shot out there in right center all the way to the fence.
Obie, Dave O'Brien with that call on ESPN Radio. The Yankees trailed 4-1, top of the fourth inning. Gio Urshela, former Indian, came to the plate with the bases loaded.
And a young right-hander will fire in and is swinging a high fly ball left field. That's deep. That is way back there. It is way gone. That is a grand slam. Gio Urshela. With an absolute monster shot, cleans him off for the New York Yankees, who come right back as you expect they would with a bomb, and they have taken the lead 5-4.
But you know what? The Indians come back in the bottom of the fifth.
He'll swing here and sting one down the line. That's a fair ball all the way to the corner. Lindor is in to score. Hernandez will try to score as well, a throw home, a play at the plate. He is safe. And here come the Cleveland Indians as they battle back to tie it.
In the top of the sixth inning, the Yankees got a runner on base. Gary Sanchez came to the plate, and this game started with absolute gusting wind going out to right field, and that seemed to help on this.
First pitch swinging. He'll hit a high fly ball. That's deep to right field. Naquin's back at the wall. Leaping up. Can't get it. It's gone. Two-run homer for Gary Sanchez. Batting out of the nine slot. And has put the Yankees back in front. 8-6.
A crazy back-and-forth game. Now, Josh Naylor of the Indians had a remarkable start for this series, getting hits in his first five at-bats, which is why everybody was surprised in the bottom of the seventh inning when Sandy Alomar Jr., who's been filling in for Terry Francona's manager, decided to pinch hit with him for him with two runners on base. Well, guess what? This happened.
Right-hander, 1-2 coming. Swinging a high fly ball, pretty well hit to center. Hicks back at the track, and it's going to be over his head off the fence. In to score Santana. Reyes coming in. He will score. Two runs in, and the Indians have tied the game 8-8 here in the seventh inning.
Jordan Luplo was the pinch hitter, and so he ties the game. Josh Naylor was going crazy on the Indians bench, excited, because it looked like Cleveland might find a way to win this game. In the bottom of the eighth inning, the Indians took the lead.
Pitch is swung on as a fly ball lofted into left, coming on Gardner. That's going to drop in for a base hit. Here comes the Shields trying to score. He will. He crosses home plate. The throw is cut. And the Indians are back in front, 9-8 in the eighth inning.
Brad Hand came on to try to close out the game for the Indians in the top of the ninth, but no, he really struggled to find the strike zone. Gary Sanchez tied the score with a sacrifice fly, and then DJ LeMahieu came to the plate.
And the pitch. Swing and a ground ball up the middle. That's going to get through for a base hit. Here comes another run in to score. It's Urshela, and the Yankees have the lead, 10-9.
Aroldis Chapman was on the mound in the bottom of the ninth.
2-2 on the way. A check swing. Did he go? He went. That is a swing and a miss. Strike three. They appealed to the first base umpire. That is a swing and a miss. This one is finally over, and the New York Yankees have eliminated the Cleveland Indians. They sweep them two straight and advance to the division series against Tampa Bay.
And you wonder if that's the last game Francisco Lindor plays with the Cleveland Indians. Gio Urshela got that huge grand slam in the middle of this game. Was asked for his thoughts on the game.
That was one of the best games I ever played in my life. That was a great game, fighting all game. We got a couple of delays. We got like two delays. But the team always stayed in the positive focus. Everybody with the same goal. We made it.
Josh Naylor talked about the loss.
It's a do-or-die game, and kind of got to bring all the energy out. Yeah, I mean, we were just trying to fight the way through the whole game from inning 1-9. It was a long game. We kept battling, kept coming back, kept having good ABs. Just wasn't our night tonight.
We'll be talking with Dan Schulman and Sarah Langs about all that coming up.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dan Shulman, longtime play-by-play man for the Toronto Blue Jays. Also, I will get to work with him on Sunday Night Baseball for years. Dan, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, Buster. How'd you enjoy the 8 games of baseball?
It was a long day, so I'm going to give you some numbers, okay? And given your experience in the business, I'm going to ask you to assess this. 162 at-bats, 765 pitches, 24 walks, 61 strikeouts, first pitch at 12:08, the last pitch well past 1 a.m. yesterday, the first game of this twin bill that our broadcast crew, the Sunday Night Baseball group, did yesterday, was the longest 0-0 score in Major League Baseball history, lasting to the 13th inning, 4 hours and 39 minutes. The second game, 4 hours and 50 minutes, the longest 9-inning game in Major League Baseball history, which included 2 rain delays, is 76 minutes. Again, 765 pitches, 162 at-bats. How are you feeling for your successor on Sunday Night Baseball, Matt Bisgersian, this morning?
Oh man, I feel sorry for him. I hope if he needed coffee, I hope he got coffee and whatever. I mean, I did 2 games yesterday, and you just made me feel so much better because our 2 games that I did, they were just kind of like regular baseball games. Neither one of them were crazy. So I'm looking at your time of games now, a 4:39 and a 4:50. It's a good thing we love what we do, huh? But, I don't know. You know, that Cincinnati, at least you had 2 close games, right? I know they were long, but a 1-0 game and a 10-9 game, I mean, if you're going to do it, you may as well do 2 games like that. And listen, it'll be a story you tell your grandchildren about. The adventures of Bisgersian, A-Rod, and Buster Olney on the most unusual day in baseball history.
Well, in the first game that we did, the Braves and Reds, a postseason record was set for strikeouts in a game, 37. And in the second game, a postseason record was tied for walks, 19.
Wow.
So it was absolutely an insane day. And at the end, I was at my home studio. Matt and Alex were up in Bristol. I got the feeling Matt was just going to drop, and he started to say some nice things to the crew. Jeff Dufine, in the control room. And I was like, Matt, stop talking. Stop talking. Stop talking right now, because we got to start up again at noon today. And I actually thought of that game that we had in Wrigley Field that went on forever. That was like 560 pitches and 18 innings. And it was incredibly cold by the end of that game.
Yeah, and Aroldis Chapman was in that game, and Aroldis Chapman was in your second game last night. So maybe he's the problem. Maybe he's the common link on days like this. But you got to be really careful thanking the crew before the game is over, because that's just daring the baseball gods for somebody to hit one out and tie the game and keep going. Like, it ain't over till it's over, as Yogi said. But I was doing the Dodger game on radio last night with Jim Bowden. And we have the Yankee game on a monitor, obviously. And the funny part was, so our game starts and your game's like in the 4th inning. And bit by bit, I turned to Jim Bowden and to our producer, Justin Ware, and I said, we're gaining on them. We're going to catch them, guys. They were in the 4th when we were in the 1st, and we're gaining on them. And we almost caught you. We finished just a little bit after you. But we had your game on, and for about an inning and a half, we were doing play-by-play of both games. Literally, like, you know, talking about Kenley Jansen coming in and then Aroldis Chapman coming in. And we had a blast over the last inning or so, because your game was incredibly exciting. We tried to deliver both to the folks on radio.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that. The Yankees win those 2 games. That second game that we did yesterday, that was a spectacular game. Like, the back and forth in a vacuum, that game would have been so much fun. Because of everything that happened, the Indians taking the lead, and then Gio Urshela, the former Indian, hitting the grand slam, and then the score being tied 6-6, and then Gary Sanchez, you know, hitting the 2-run homer, then the Indians coming back, and then the Indians taking the lead. It was amazing. Here was our friend Aaron Boone talking about that game.
I don't know how you top that one, the back and forth, just the amount of big moments and plays by different guys, you know, we're excited in that room. We're excited for the opportunity to continue our quest now in San Diego to try and win a championship. And it's nice to, with it being so long and after 1 a.m., I'm glad we don't have to come back and play tomorrow.
Yeah, so that was our friend Aaron. And he, you know, before the game, there had been some question about whether or not Gary Sanchez was actually going to play in the game. Kyle Higashioka, as you know, has become the personal catcher of Garrett Cole. He clearly is a better defender than Gary Sanchez, who really struggled offensively this year. And going into the day, you kind of wondered, you know what, are they just going to ride the better catcher? But Aaron thought about it the day before. He made up his mind that he was going to play Gary Sanchez, and he was rewarded for it.
Yeah, Gary Sanchez, as you know, I mean, he's barely hit at all this year, but there have been little signs here and there. I saw a ton of the Yankees over the last 3 weeks of the season because the Yankees and Blue Jays played all 10 of their games against each other in the last 20 games of the season. It was really crazy. So we saw the back and forth between Higashioka and between Sanchez. But I saw a better Gary Sanchez in the last 2 weeks of the season than a little bit earlier, than before that when they just started playing the Blue Jays. And he's always got a chance to run into one. I mean, he could go strikeout, homer, but that homer's going to play for the Yankees. And, you know, I think all other teams are really respectful of what the Yankees are capable of doing. And obviously the Rays took 8 out of 10 for them, and what a series it looks like that's going to be. But the Yankees just went and rolled up 22 runs on Cleveland in 2 games on an incredible pitching staff. You know, did something to Shane Bieber that nobody does. Like, nobody hits the guy at all, and they scored 7 runs on him. And they beat up on the Indians again through the second game. And listen, when Gary Sanchez is hitting 9th, and either Frazier or Gardner is hitting 8th, and Gleyber Torres is hitting 7th, I mean, you got a deep lineup, and they're really dangerous right now.
What was your takeaway from your 2-game series, Jays and Rays?
Well, from a Blue Jay point of view, they're getting better, but they're a very young team, and at times they look like a young team. Inexplicably, Hunjin Ryu, who was great all season, had his worst outing, and game 2 was over before it began, in essence. So for Tampa Bay, I have an incredible amount of respect for the Rays, for Kevin Cash, and for the way they go about things. You know, the way the pieces of their puzzle fit together is better than any other team in baseball. What Brasso can be pinch hit for by a Wendell, and a Choi can be pinch hit for by a Diaz. You're playing a 28-man roster. It must seem like you've got 50 guys, because every time you turn around, there's a good pinch hitter in the on-deck circle in the middle innings, or a 98-mile-an-hour guy warming up in the bullpen. And I think they do their job as well as anybody. They understand what they have to do in order to put the best roster together. Their top 5 guys might not be better than your top 5 guys, but their bottom 5 are, and their middle 5 are. Like, the depth on their roster is just terrific. How about this, Buster? You probably talked about this. They had 12 different pitchers get a save in a 60-game season, which in and of itself is a ridiculous, absurd statistic. And then the guy who got the save in game 1 of the playoffs is Pete Fairbanks, who wasn't one of the 12. So they had 13 different guys get a save. They got home runs from Manuel Margot, who only hit 1 during the season. Hunter Renfroe hits a grand slam. Like, literally every guy on that roster contributes. They're very confident, and they're very good, and it's going to be a heck of a series with the Yankees.
Yeah, I've been saying, I really feel like the Rays have this tremendous competitive arrogance. I mean, you just see it, that they believe that they're going to find a way to win it. You saw it starting to develop at the end of last year. Do you have a gut feel on Rays and Yankees?
I think it's going to be a titanic battle, to be honest with you. I think they're probably the 2 best teams in the American League, regardless of the seeding. You'd even have the Yankees for the 8th seed going in. I think I would have felt that way. But I agree with you. I think the Rays are kind of battle-hardened from their playoffs last year, took the Astros to the 5th and deciding game last year, and as I mentioned, took 8 out of 10 from the Yankees. They are not going to be afraid. They are used to playing in big games, and I think what you said as well, I think they've got a really healthy competitive arrogance about them, and I think they believe, you know, this little engine that could narrative, I think they use that to their advantage, but I don't think they actually believe that. I think they believe they're the best team, and they deserve to be where they are, and they do deserve to be where they are. You went 40-20 during the season, and you deserve it, and their pitching is extraordinary. I will tell you this, for people who didn't see the games, Blake Snell and Tyler Glass now were both really good against Toronto, especially Snell. And they've got Charlie Morton, and then they've got that unbelievable bullpen. So, you know, it's interesting, 5 games in 5 days, you got to have at least a bullpen day, or you got to roll out a 4th and 5th starter. And I think the Rays pitching staff is a little deeper than the Yankees pitching staff. But, you know, we all know what happened with Chapman and Brasso and the rivalry that's developed between the two. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The Astros complete a two-game sweep against the Twins up in Minnesota. Carlos Correa afterward, after he had a good game, he threw out a guy at home plate. He blasted a tie-breaking home run. He had some interesting stuff to say, Dan. Give a listen.
It was a special celebration this time. You know, I know a lot of people are mad. I know a lot of people don't want to see us here. But what are they going to say now? You know, we're a solid team. We play great baseball. We won a series on the road in Minnesota. So what are they going to say now?
What are they going to say now? And I've known Carlos Correa for a long time. I did two E60s on him, and I was watching that, and I was kind of cringing, Dan. But you know what? Maybe at this point they figured out that nothing that they say will ever satisfy baseball fans or people with players on other teams, and they figure, you know what? Yeah, well, okay, we're gonna be the bad guys as we go forward.
Yeah, I think there's no other really way to do it. And I don't know what the question was, but maybe the question was, you know, what do you have to say to people who have been on your case all year? And I don't know how you answer the question any other way. Like, there's nothing wrong with him saying we played good baseball and we won a series in Minnesota. That's fair. It's just the what are we going to say? What are they going to say now? I guess he could have skipped that part and said, you know what? I don't want to go there. We're just going to celebrate the win. And we're going to look forward to our next opponent. And that probably would have been, you know, the safer road to take in order to minimize the criticism. But it's certainly not going to make people like them anymore. They're, you know, the neutral fan, nobody's rooting for the Astros, and the Astros understand that. And you're right, it's almost like they've become, the villain in a Batman movie or something like that. And if you're going to be the villain, you may as well play the role. But how about the pitching they got the last 2 days? Like, the Twins can hit, and they were held to 2 runs on 7 hits in 2 games. And it'll be very interesting. How about if Oakland beats the White Sox, right? And now it's Houston and Oakland, two teams that don't like each other at all. So we got all kinds of storylines going forward.
Yeah, the Twins in this 2-game series had 119. A lot of times, I think you and I agree, when current players are asked questions like, well, your franchise hasn't won a World Series in last 25 years. How do you feel about that? Or, you know, in the last 20 years, your team has, 10-20 record in the postseason. How do you feel about that? I don't really like those statistics most of the time because I don't think they apply to the current context. But every so often, there does become these streaks that become a thing. You know, the Red Sox not winning the World Series in 86 years. That became a thing in Boston, became a thing for the players. The Cubs, 108 years, it became a thing. I think losing 18 straight postseason games is now officially a thing for the Twins. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I was around, especially those Cubs teams, a lot leading up to the year where they won the World Series. And even if it's not a thing, if you're getting asked about it every day, it's a thing. Because it's that people are planting the seed and they're putting it in your mind. And I think it's human nature for it to be on your mind a little bit, maybe not necessarily as you're standing in the batter's box looking at the 3-2 pitch. But I'm sure there's a little bit of man, I can't believe this is happening again, or you got to be kidding me, that sort of an attitude. And I agree with you. Losing 18 in a row in the playoffs is a thing. I thought they caught a break. I assumed all along they would play the Yankees in the first round because that seems to be their predetermined destiny, to play the Yankees in the playoffs. And we all know how much the Twins have struggled. So I thought they caught a huge break, for lack of a better term, when they were playing anybody other than the Yankees, because at least it's a different opponent. It's a clean start. And they just never got going. They just never swung the bats. And I don't know if they talked about after the game, whether they were, gripping the bat a little bit tight, whether they felt it. And I always feel for, teams that have things in October, because you can't fix it next April. You know what I mean? You can't. The Twins could win the first 50 games of the season next year, and they can't fix this until they get another opportunity in the playoffs. And that's a long time.
Yeah, and the old story about Sisyphus pushing the rock back up the hill. It feels like every summertime, and it is going to be something that's going to hang on them. You had the Dodgers and Brewers, and I'm curious about the sequence of events as you got news before that game, because, going into the series, really looked at the Brewers as, well, under this circumstance or this circumstance, maybe they would have a chance, to take a short series against the Dodgers, but, man, they just keep on taking hits.
Yeah, they do. And losing Devin Williams is a big one. And the sequence of events is, so I'm doing the Blue Jays and the Rays, and it ends at, I don't know, 7:20. And I finish, and Justin Ware, who I mentioned before, our producer walks in, and he goes, okay, let's get to the other studio. Craig Council's doing a Zoom at 7:30. Let's go. So I cut off here and walked from Studio E to Studio 2, plugged my computer in, and opened it up. And the first thing Craig Council talked about, of course, was Devin Williams not being in there. And that's a huge loss for them, given the incredible year that he had out of the bullpen. And he said something to the effect of, listen, we lost about 50% of our innings in this series in the last 4 days, talking about Corbin Burnes and Devin Williams. And he said, well, nobody's going to feel sorry for us, and we're going to try to win, and we think we've got the arms to do it, and we have no choice but to throw them in there. We're going to throw guys into situations they might not otherwise be in, but we believe in them. And you know what? They played a good game last night. The only problem for them was Brent Suter, who was good for them this year, just didn't have his command. He walked five. He walked five all season, Buster, and he walked five in the game last night. How crazy is that? And didn't get out of the second inning and really gifted some early runs to the Dodgers. And from there, the Brewers hung in. Arcia hit a homer. The bullpen was great for Milwaukee. Yardley was great. Justin Topa, who had only made 7 major league appearances, comes in throwing 98, had 2 scoreless innings, and every single inning, they got a man on. Every single inning, they were a base hit away from tying the game or, you know, getting right back into the game, and they just couldn't get over the hump. And Trinan and Jansen closed it out, and the Dodgers win 4-2. But can you imagine if Milwaukee found a way to win that game? And then this early in the playoffs, Kershaw's on the mound in an elimination game for the Dodger juggernaut. Can you imagine what Dodger fans would have been like? So, I mean, they've got a chance to sweep it tonight with Kershaw on the mound. He was great this year. And the Dodgers are great. I mean, we all know that. But I give Milwaukee a lot of credit because they didn't feel sorry for themselves. They went out and played a really good baseball game.
Speaking of teams having to play shorthanded, San Diego, you know, has this wonderful season to make the playoffs for the first time since 2006. And they go into this short series now without Denelson Lamet, who's got the best slider in baseball. And they also get word that Mike Clevinger has an arm injury. And it sounds like that is not a minor thing. You feel bad for them. And on the other hand, I got to say, you know, the Cardinals, with everything that they've been through this year, getting having the COVID shutdown, not even able to work out for a period of 16 days, all those doubleheaders that they had to make up, it's kind of cool to see them, you know, in this position where today maybe they could wrap it up.
It is. And it's really cool that the Cardinals and the Marlins, both of the teams who had the major outbreaks, not only made the postseason, and in the Marlins' case, I think it's remarkable what they did. And Don Mattingly's got to be unanimous manager of the year, because as we know, manager of the year is generally the manager whose team overcame the most or exceeded preseason expectations by the most. And the Marlins qualify on whatever front you want to look at. So, you know, for the Marlins and the Cardinals to both make the postseason, as you said, and both win game one of their playoff series on the road against a higher seeded opponent, it's really incredible. And I don't know about you, this isn't to shortchange the Cardinals at all, but before the Clevinger and the Lamet injuries, I just kept thinking about, well, the Padres are the 4 seed and the Dodgers are the 1 seed. And isn't that going to be an incredible series in the division series? You know, given how good their games were during the regular season, they're in the same division. The Dodgers are, you know, the established contender. The Padres are the young kids trying to knock the Dodgers off their perch. And now it looks like it's going to be really difficult for San Diego losing their top 2 pitchers. So yeah, I do feel sorry for teams that suffer injuries out of the blue late in the season. You know, you played your whole year with a certain kind of roster and a certain kind of team. And then, you know, what's worse than losing your top 2 starting pitchers in a 2 out of 3 series? Like, you could not draw it up worse for any team than to have happen what happened to the Padres. But you're right. Cardinals deserve credit. Marlins deserve credit. But they still got to close it out. So you just need one more win in those series.
All right, old friend, anything you want me to say to Matt? Because, look, I was on the same broadcast as well, and so was Alex Rodriguez. No one is carrying the ball like Matt Fiskerzian in that situation, play-by-play man, because, of course, I can check out for a couple minutes, collect my thoughts, you know, try to regain my voice. But to be the play-by-play man under those circumstances yesterday, 765 pitches, anything you want me to pass on?
Well, we all know that analysts and reporters all want to be play-by-play people. So, you know, tell him to give you or A-Rod a half inning of play-by-play just to put his feet up for a little bit. He deserves it.
Well, okay. Well, you know me well enough to know that is the thing that keeps me up at night. I would have to do play by play.
I know. I tried to get you to do that when I was there. You kept turning it down. I couldn't make you do it. But give Matty a hello. Tell him he's doing a great job. And the finish line is coming. It's 2020, man. We all got to do what we got to do in this crazy year.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you also, help us out over at ESPN. After we got done our game last night, I turned on the very end of the Dodgers, and I can't remember who they were playing, Dodgers and Brewers. And I was having a beer, and then, hearing Carl Ravitch talk about you doing statistics on that game, how much sleep did you get?
I don't even know, I think, is my answer. Not a whole lot, but you know what? It might have been more than leading up to the big game or the big day with all of the games, because there was a little less to prep for today than there was for yesterday with 8 games. So some sleep, but not a lot.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
Number 3 is 9. So the A's entering today have lost 9 straight winner-take-all postseason games, which is the longest streak in postseason history by 2 games. The next longest winner-take-all losing streak in the postseason is 7 straight, which is an active streak by the Indians, which they will not be putting on the line tonight because they lost yesterday. But the last time that the A's won a winner-take-all postseason game was 1973 World Series Game 7 against the Mets. And they'd actually won 4 straight winner-take-all postseason games between the 1972 postseason and 1973 postseason, but they have not won one since. And they've been eliminated in 6 straight postseason rounds. They're trying to avoid becoming the 6th team to be eliminated in 7 straight. And, you know, yesterday it felt like, okay, maybe this is the A's team to not do this and to end all of this postseason misery for Oakland. But in the first game, it did not look like that. So we'll see what happens.
Number 2.
Number 2 is 37. So I know you talked about this a bit already, but that was how many strikeouts there were in the Reds and Braves game. In game 1, the first game of the day yesterday to kick off the marathon, 13 innings, 37 strikeouts, the most in any game in postseason history. The previous record had been 34 in the 2 18-inning postseason games, 2014 NLDS Game 2, 2018 World Series Game 3. So this was in 13 innings, and we got not just 1 more, but 3 more than there had ever been. The Reds pitchers had 21 strikeouts. They struck out 21 batters and lost the game. And now the Braves are in a situation that you want to be in. They have a chance to clinch today, but they've lost 7 straight games with a chance to clinch, which is the second longest streak in postseason history. And we know how the postseason has gone for the Braves a lot recently. So hopefully they can turn the tide.
Number one
is 18. We can't go without talking about numbers and not mentioning all that the Twins have done and not done in the postseason lately. So they've lost 18 straight postseason games now, which is already by far the longest losing streak in the postseason in the major North American professional sports, any of them. They broke that tie when they lost their first game. They've been eliminated in 9 straight postseason series, which is the 3rd longest streak. Again, looking up at the Braves and the Cubs, who have had 10 series loss streaks. And they've lost 9 straight potential elimination games, which is the 2nd longest such streak, behind the Indians, who've lost 10 straight, which is also active. And I didn't mean for this all to be so negative, but there are a lot of streaks of teams with some postseason, you know, mishaps that just keep getting extended this postseason.
All right, I got two follows for you. One, and I was going to talk to Dan about this, but I know he was doing another game. I know you were watching Braves and Reds. Max Fried was pitching against Trevor Bauer, so that was a lot of the reason why the hitters struggled. I kind of wondered as I was watching that about the conditions. Like, it felt like this weird sort of time of day, the way the sun was. Brian Snitker mentioned that they got those cardboard cutouts and there was some glare there. And then as we got later in the day, you had unusual shadows in that ballpark. I just kind of wonder if that was a factor. Did you have the same feeling or no?
Yeah, it definitely, especially early. I mean, those are two outstanding pitchers, and I think we expected them to pitch well, and they did exactly that. But when they were having, when hitters were having so much trouble against both of them, I was thinking of, it just felt so bright. And there was something about how early it felt and everything else. I mean, these things always happen in the postseason with atypical game times, especially on days when there are multiple games. Even the old, you know, throwback NLDS, oh, there are four games, there are so many games today, which is now nothing. But it definitely had that sort of aura of like something feels a little funky. And that's not to take away from the pitchers, who I think did a great job. But when you see that that then happened with the bullpen for so long, it does seem like there was something. And those shadows were very, very notable towards the end of the game. So it did feel like, you know, maybe the conditions were helping in some way or hurting the hitters.
And it's going to be the same today because we're going to start at noon. And then the second question that I had for you, Oakland did not announce a starting pitcher last night going into this third game of their series today. I saw some things on social media that Sean Manaea may turn out to be the guy. I got to tell you, Oakland's front office is so great and they've had so much success, but some of their choices with starting pitchers in these playoff games in recent years make me shake my head. If you look at the history this year, I would not start a lefty against the White Sox. I'd be going with Mike Fiers. What about you?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think everyone was pretty surprised at how that went for game one initially too. You know, I mean, not that you necessarily want Mike Fiers game one when you have other good pitchers, and Chris Bassitt would have been the choice for them, but he had pitched too recently to pitch game one. But I mean, everyone, I think at this point knows, hey, the White Sox are really, really good against left-handed starters. In fact, they haven't lost a game yet. So I was also pretty surprised to see those rumblings. And I think it's such a tough choice because they've been in this situation before with the winner take all. I just talked about it. You don't want to make the wrong move. And I do understand that, you know, Mike Fiers is not the pitcher that Sean Manaea is, although they were pretty similar this year. But I think there's an expectation that Manaea might rise to the occasion a little bit more. But yeah, I think you got to throw the righty. I mean, you just don't want to get eliminated in a postseason series where everyone knew the stat to watch entering the series was, hey, they're really good against lefties. And then you threw two lefties and lost those two games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that today. All right, Sarah, I hope you get a nap maybe 5 minutes before the game start today. Thank you.
Thank you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday, and I actually got a question for you to start off with. What are you snacking on while you're doing double duty there? I mean, you're basically locked in your studio all day. What are you eating? What are you sipping on?
I actually was texting my son to bring me some Red Bull. Eating anything during the course of the day, can't do it.
Oh,
no,
man.
I was locked in the room, and so I just, you know, every so often I'd send a text to my son, please bring me a Red Bull. Please bring me a Red Bull.
No granola bar, no fruit, nothing, not even a nibble?
No, you can't really eat when you're on air.
Yeah, okay.
You know? You can't do it.
All right. Just curious. Let's go to Aaron at Aaron San Diego. He writes in, pace of play in the Padres-Cardinals game was very slow tonight. Do you think that negatively affected the Padres, who are normally such a high-energy team?
Aaron, I wish I could give you an answer, but I didn't get to watch them play. You know, I was watching all the activity in social media yesterday. Wow, this is great. 8 games. It's kind of like the NCAA tournament. You're bouncing back and forth between games. No, I was pretty much locked in on the 2 games. I'll look for it later today.
Simon Harrow, Simon J.H. writes in, can we call it a sweep when a team wins 2 games? Simon in Hong Kong.
Yes, you can call it a sweep. It doesn't feel as exciting as a 3-game sweep or 4-game sweep, but you can call it a sweep.
Next, we got Debbie Gammons Brown. She writes in, what's happening to home field advantage in the wild card round, Buster?
Yeah, Debbie, we've been talking about it, how no fans in the stands. There isn't really a home field advantage. You know, Alex Rodriguez was talking on our broadcast about how when Progressive Field had fans in it, the Indians fans are big time into it. They can affect the way the game's going, but there are no fans in the stands. And I think that's it's not a surprise that home field advantage really hasn't been there.
Last one for today, Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim 1 writes in, hey Buster, do you think Bauer will be pitching a lot more games in Atlanta next year? The Braves love one-year deals for veterans, Keuchel, Hamels, JD, Ozuna. Him and the young arms they have would be formidable. Interesting idea, Justin.
Well, and Trevor Bauer has talked in the past about playing his entire career on one-year deals, but I have seen interviews where he's starting to back off that because he's going to be in a position this fall where he's going to get a massive contract or certainly massive contract offers. And I think now that it's actually right in front of him, the idea of passing on, say, $180 million versus taking a one-year deal for $30 million, I think it might be more appealing to him.
Yeah, especially with the state of the upcoming free agency and everything going on. So that makes sense. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Keep the tweets coming, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dan, to Sarah, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening and stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.